Next case for argument is 21-1940, Koopmans v. McDonough. Thank you for waiting, so take your time getting set up. Good morning. Mr. Carpenter, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter, appearing on behalf of Mr. John Koopmans. Mr. Koopmans' appeal deals with whether or not the Veterans Court made a clear error of law by relying upon the Secretary's proffered post hoc rationalization that the existence of a rebuttable presumption had some effect on the way in which the Q claim was both presented and defended both before the board and in his appeal to the Veterans Court. There is no relevance to the fact that the presumption that Mr. Koopmans relies upon is rebuttable. Additionally, the court...
Did your client put on before the board of the CAVC, was there indication put on that covered, that we're not in B? We're under A and we're not covered by any of the exemptions in B. Was that his argument or did he just rest on A?
He just rested on A because he did not believe that since the regulation required the application of the presumption, and the board found that the presumption did not apply, that when he appealed to the Veterans Court, he simply presented the fact that they relied upon a misinterpretation by concluding that it did not apply. So the question before the Veterans Court was merely application of 3.80 rather than, as a matter of law, rather than whether or not the presumption could have possibly been rebutted.
Well, we're in a CUE context, which makes this considerably different from a normal case. You know better than I. Yeah. And so what was the error of the board to say, you may have been an A, but you didn't meet B. You fell into some of the exceptions. End of story. You haven't shown that you satisfied the CUE standard.
Well, because the board never spoke to B. The board only categorically said that the regulation, without reference to A or B, was not applicable. That was the determination made by the board.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding what the CAVC did, but didn't they say that you haven't shown that you're not under B?
Oh, yes. That's exactly what the Veterans Court said.
Right. Because why is that error?
Because
they're applying the law.
Because, Your Honor, they were invited to focus on B, or when the question was only whether or not the regulation in its entirety was or was not applicable. That was the basis of the board's decision that was being sought for judicial review. The secretary then introduced as a defense, if you will, to why that wasn't an error, to find that it was not applicable, was because of the existence of the rebuttable presumption. The existence of the rebuttable presumption has nothing to do with whether or not it's applicable. And the board made no such finding.
Wait. I mean, you started off by saying the question was whether or not under this regulation he should get his CUE claim recognized. Well, the regulation has two parts, A and B, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so are you saying he didn't have any... There was no requirement on your client to deal with the B of that regulation?
Yes, Your Honor. Because number one, it's not been demonstrated that B in fact applies to this part of the presumption under A.
I don't understand what that means.
Clearly
A and B apply, right?
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because A applies to two types of chronic diseases. Chronic diseases that were not noted in service, but occurred within a presumptive period. That's the first portion of the regulation under A. Then it moves into a circumstance in which there was in fact a diagnosis while on active duty, which is the case for Mr. Koopmans. He had a diagnosis of an ulcer while on active duty. That then provides a separate, now codified at 38 CFR 3.303B, for a statutory presumption of service connection that if you have a chronic disease noted as such during service and any time thereafter, no matter how remote, you are entitled to a presumption of service connection.
Can you just tell me where that second piece is in 380, either the 1949 or 1950?
Yes, Your Honor. It's a little difficult because it is such a long regulation to be able to point to it, but it occurs, I don't know whether to count lines, but the opening phrase is when service connection is established.
Okay.
But
why does that cover a situation that, as far as I can tell, the rest of the regulation doesn't cover? The rest of the regulation seems to be only about what's now, this is a shorthand, I think.
Yes.
What's now in 307? That is, stuff that appears after discharge, you're going to say, if it's within a certain time, we're going to say, treat it the same way as if it appeared during. But that this regulation, I'm having a hard time seeing how it says what to do, that is, that this regulation addresses at all how to treat a chronic disease that's manifested during service.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure I can dispute that because I'm not sure the language clearly conveys that as written.
The 1961 3.303 does.
It does do that. And this court has interpreted that regulation's meaning, and it uses the identical language that is found here.
Well, no, it doesn't, because it actually says, I can find it. I've lost it. It's got a phrase in it that tells you actually to look to see if service connection is actually established. Let me just ask you, is it your position that either under the current regulation or under the 380s, that if a chronic disease, let's call it, manifests, that is, you see it during service, that there is no further inquiry into whether it pre-existed service?
There is no language in either this regulation, 3.80, or in the current codification at 3.303 that makes any reference whatsoever to pre-existing. So yes, Your Honor, the answer is without some specific reference to a pre-existing condition, there is no reason to believe that pre-existence is somehow a relevant consideration.
Well, in the current regulation, 303B, when it says, with chronic disease shown as such, that is shown to be chronic, in service or within the presumptive period, so as to permit a finding of service connection.
Yes.
I would have thought that that language says the mere fact that it appears during service is not enough to establish service connection if, in the light of other evidence, like pre-existing, proof of pre-existing condition and not aggravated, it's not actually service connected.
Well, with respect, Your Honor, that's not the interpretation made in Groves.
Or in Walker, I think you're right about that.
Yes.
Without referring to that language.
Yes.
So it's not quite true to say that the language is the same.
Well, okay, we differ on that. Let me phrase it this way. I believe that the language conveys the same intent. And the relevant intent here.
And your view is that the pre-existing nature and non-aggravating character of a chronic disease that is noted during service is irrelevant because the fact that it's noted during service means it is service-connected, full stop.
Well, it sets up the trigger. If it was noted as such in service, and then any time post-service, the same disease is present.
Does 3.80B allow disproof of the premise or only of the character of post-discharge developments?
I believe that the language in B only refers to the establishment of incurrence in service. And the distinction between the language in A and the language in B is that it refers to, as the Veterans Court noted, establishing incurrence in service. But establishment of incurrence in service is obviated here because there's a diagnosis. The fact that there may or may not have been a pre-existing condition simply isn't relevant to the equation. The only equation under this regulation is noted in service as a chronic disease. It's an ulcer. It's on the list of chronic diseases as an ulcer. There's evidence post-service, because he was discharged for this very ulcer, that when he made application, he had the same chronic disease. Therefore, this presumption of service connection, as was interpreted in Groves, applies. Rebuttal does not come into the equation. Pre-existence does not come into the equation. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Today we have a question as to whether or not there has been established a legitimate question of law as to the Veterans Court's application of the prejudicial error standard here, and we would submit that they have not shown that. Here, contrary to Mr. Koopman's allegations in his brief, the Veterans Court did not engage in any de novo fact-finding and simply noted
I want to move you directly onto, I need to understand better than I do right now what the government's position is on how to interpret a number of things. The current regulation and its 3.80 version way back when. Is the government's view that a disease that is noticed during service and noticed even as chronic is service-connected under 3.80?
No, Your Honor. We believe that 3.80 and B specifically is consistent with the larger scheme for veterans' benefits and the congressional basis for basic entitlement, which requires that a condition be...
Well, let me start. Do you think that 3.80 Section A provides a presumption of service connection in the circumstance that I just identified?
May be sufficient.
Noticing of a disease during service and the disease is at the time noticed as chronic.
It may be sufficient to trigger the presumption.
Is it in your view? May doesn't help me. Is it in your view? Does 3.80A apply, say anything about that situation?
It does not. And so even to the extent
including the sentence way down at the bottom of the first long column, where service connect.
Well, we believe that regulation needs to be read consistent with the larger scheme for benefits, including that the principles of service connection that are currently codified in 38 U.S.C. 1110 at a time with this identical language in 3.10.
You have the same view about the current 3.303B? That in particular, that I take it that Groves plus Walker state, though they didn't quite have facts in front of them to make it a dispositive point on the facts, but that they state that in the circumstance I identified, a chronic disease noticed during service as chronic is service connected. Without further inquiry into whether in fact it's not service connected because actually the veteran had it before. And it hasn't gotten worse.
Here, however, we are in the Q context, which must be analyzed in the law at the time. 3.80 A and B must be read together, and B does say that evidence which may be considered in rebuttal of service incurrence. Service incurrence is part of also the statutory scheme. Benefits are triggered on whether a condition is incurred in or aggravated by service.
In your view, if that's your view, do you think that at least what we stated with some, care, I think, in Groves and Walker is wrong?
Well,
If all of this is way of kind of by way of background to getting to this point about what exactly is the scope of 3.80B. Tell me where in 3.80B there is permitted rebuttal as to anything that occurred before discharge. I took 3.80B to be entirely about rebutting the presumption that the veteran's current problem is traceable back to what we are by the A assumption deeming to have been service connected at the during service, but not to any kind of rebuttal about the condition was actually pre-existing service and it didn't get worse.
I think that the beginning language of 3.80B discusses service and currents, and in the context of the larger regulatory and statutory scheme, I think that is relevant to a pre-existing condition. It says evidence which may be considered in rebuttal of service and currents, so not speaking to a later manifestation, but of service and currents of a chronic or tropical disease, will be any evidence of a nature usually accepted as competent to indicate the time and existence or inception of disease, and medical judgment will be exercised. It continues on.
So you think that that does allow questioning even whether this disease, chronic, noticed during service, was actually service-connected because it pre-existed and wasn't aggravated?
Yes, and I think that's consistent with the statutory scheme, which triggers basic entitlement to conditions which are incurred or aggravated by service.
Isn't that a question of law that is before us in the sense that the Veterans Court's determination that there was no prejudicial error for as a result of Mr. Koopman's not putting on any kind of case about 3.80B rests on the idea that 3.80B has something to do with this?
Not if the prejudicial error analysis... I see the question that Your Honor is asking, and so I think that the Veterans Court decision can be read as implicitly agreeing with the board that 3.80 applied only to conditions that were incurred in service or aggravated by service, but did not extend to pre-existing conditions. If that question has been raised here, we would contend that the appropriate thing to do would be for this court to affirm on an alternative basis, because the board's interpretation of 3.80 was correct. With 3.80 read in consistently with the statutory limits that Congress has established, the existence of his ulcer as a pre-existing condition would then would be appropriate evidence to rebut the presumption. And so in that circumstance, if the court were to find that the Veterans Court jumped the gun by not specifically analyzing that, I think that what the Veterans Court did was agree that even if the presumption could be shown, the first step, that evidence of pre-existing condition would need to be shown to show that there was clear and unmistakable error in the 1955 decision. And I think it is undisputed here that there was no allegation that the evidence in 1955 was insufficient to rebut that presumption.
In under the modern version of 3.303, is it recognized that, or do you think that there is rebuttal available on the underlying incurrence in service of the chronic disease at issue?
I believe that the current scheme also allows for rebuttal of the in-service incurrence, which would be, again, consistent with 1110.
Is there something in 303 that says that the way you say 3.80B said it?
I apologize, Your Honor. I have the law that was relevant at the time, because this is the Q context, then 3.80 before me, but I don't have the current regulation. Okay. If the court has no further questions, we would simply note that here, while we do not believe there was any legal error with the Veterans Court's analysis in requiring that Q, which is a rare and specific type of error, there would be a showing not only of an error, but that error would be outcome determinative, that there was no legal error in that. But to the extent that the court has any concerns with that, we believe that the board decision properly interpreted 3.80 as not applying to conditions that pre-existed service, and that to the extent that the court has any concerns about that, it should affirm on that basis.
Mr. Koopman would submit that the government has overlooked that in its own regulation, it created a regulatory presumption, as this court later found in Groves, of service connection, not a presumption of incurrence. The presumption of incurrence is in 38 U.S.C. 105. This court in Shedden made that determination, that it in fact created a statutory presumption of service connection, but only as to the element of incurrence. This regulation, both in its original form in 3.80 and in its current form in 3.303B, creates, as this court found in Groves, a regulatory presumption of service connection. When service connection is presumed, under the normal understanding of presumptions, there is no longer a burden on the claimant to come forward with any other evidence. The burden shifts to the government.
Well, that may be true in your ordinary case. The difficulty I'm having here is, even if that is true in your ordinary case, why in the Q context, where the burden all really is to the veteran to show the outcome would have been manifestly different, that burden isn't a different burden?
Because the Q allegation made to the agency and appealed to the board was that but for the failure of the VA in 1955 to apply this presumption, there would have been a presumption of service connection which would have been awarded as a matter of law. That is a manifestly different outcome if you apply the applicable provision. On appeal, the board said the regulation doesn't apply. We appealed to the Veterans Court and asked them to do that.
If the agency or the board in 1955 would have, as a matter of law, given you a presumption, the board wouldn't have stopped. It would have to get to giving you benefits. That's the outcome that
yes.
would have to be manifestly different.
Yes.
And the problem is that I think the Veterans Court focused on is that if, as it thought, 3.80B allows a range of things to rebut, part of your Q case has to be show that when the board, recognizing a presumption, would go on to the next step, it would have led to your getting benefits, and you just didn't do that.
And that's
what the Veterans Court said, right?
That's exactly what the Veterans Court said. But that is not what the board said. And the Veterans Court cannot affirm on a basis that was not relied upon by the board. Had the board made that analysis and said, yes, it does apply, but even if it did apply, you didn't rebut it. But it's not my burden to rebut it. It's the secretary's burden to rebut it. It's not the burden shifts once this service connection is established based upon a incurrence in service of a chronic disease. That triggers the regulatory presumption. Once that regulatory presumption is triggered, the burden then shifts to the VA to come forward to rebut under B, if appropriate. I don't believe it's appropriate, because it is talking about service incurrence under B only.
Can we go back a minute or two where you made the point, it seemed to be you're resting heavily on the fact that, well, that may be what the CAVC said, but it's not what the BVA said.
Correct.
Well, I mean, in your brief, you correctly say they're not supposed to do new fact-finding at the CAVC level.
Yes.
It hasn't been done in the board. But really, I mean, in connection with determining whether or not there's prejudicial error, doesn't that require them to, or allow them to make alternative holdings or analysis? Doesn't that analysis expand? If we're looking at prejudicial error, are you saying that the CAVC couldn't have said, well, let's look at the entire statute and start talking about B, even though the BVA didn't do it?
As you frame it, Your Honor, I would agree. But that's not what the Veterans Court did. I direct the court's attention to the last page of their decision, which is at Appendix 6, and what the concluding paragraph says, in sum, it is not absolutely clear that the
it's Appendix 10, right?
Appendix 10.
Okay.
It's the very last page of the Veterans Court decision.
Yeah.
And what it says is in sum, because it is not absolutely clear that the application of 303B would result in an award of service connection. That assumes a fact that it was possible to rebut. That is too high a burden to place upon a claimant, an appellant, before the Veterans Court to show prejudicial error. And this court in Slaughter on the 30th of March made that observation, that exact observation about the misapplication of the rule of prejudicial error. And that's precisely what happened here, because the court accepted hook, line, and sinker that B applied. If the board had said B applied, that would have been a different situation. And we would have come forward and shown why there wasn't legally sufficient evidence to show that the secretary had rebutted it in 1955. But there was no effort to rebut it. What was relied upon in 1955 was the assumption that because he referenced symptoms when he was being diagnosed while on active duty that pre-existed service, that they could extrapolate that it existed prior to service. They would have to have rebutted the presumption. And as this court determined in Roughton, the presumption requires them to at least carry forward with clear and convincing evidence to rebut that presumption. I see that I'm way over my time. I apologize, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank both sides, and the case is submitted.